time to party, we will party hard.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is!
Alex Dono and Brian Monroe with you here on 790 The Ticket. Got the great Vlad Louisant on the other side of the glass. Somewhere still in the building, we have Dan Day. He's hosting the Best of the Joe. I just had to bring him up because he's an LSU fan. Pretty sure he showed up to work naked and drunk today.
I can't believe he's at work.
I know, right?
I think I'd still be drunk and passed out somewhere.
Yeah, I think I saw on TV today that this was supposed to be the first day back at class for LSU students.
Oh, no, they gave it up.
Good luck with that. But, they had to give it up.
They had to give it up.
They've been delaying.
They gave him Monday and Tuesday.
It was supposed to be Monday.
Oh,
no,
really?
And Tuesday,
I thought. Yeah, but then since the national title game was Monday, they gave everybody the day off. And
right.
Then, obviously, they won last night, so it's like, yeah, you know, so might as well give it the
next. As they should, they can make it up in the back
end. If they had lost the game last night, would they have kept the classes for today? Because I'll tell you, like, if I were an LSU student, I don't think I'd want to go to class after lost the national championship. Yeah, but the thing is, like, either way, like, if you win the title game, you want to take the next day off to celebrate because you're going to be, you know, celebrating deep into the night. But if you lose the title game, I'm going to need a day off in morning,
yes,
right? I would have needed the day off either way.
Yes, I would have needed a day off either way because I would have been knee-deep in a bottle of Crown regardless.
Well, I know that, but, yeah, that's just Tuesday night for Brian Monroe.
Yeah, nah, I don't drink during the week. Come
oh,
on
you don't?
Now. No.
Honestly, I had no idea.
No.
Only, I just assumed you were cracking it open every night of the
only
week.
Only last night because it was a football game, but yeah, that's about it.
So even a game that you have no rooting interest in, you'll still crack open some
Crown. Oh, for sure, man. Anytime I'm watching some football, I got to have a little bit.
Were you handing out stacks of cash like Odell Beckham Jr.?
Well, come on. It's Monopoly money, right? Isn't according to them. It's fake.
Is that the most ridiculous explanation? And I did some reading on that today, and it was really smart. Like the whole system, it's a mockery, right? And I'm not angry that OBJ was handing out cash. Like, I don't really care. I brought it up today to some friends because I just know that if that had been Miami and not LSU in that situation, there'd be talk of the death penalty. There'd be an NCAA investigation because Miami is not treated equally to, you know, SEC programs. So the fact that it was LSU, not Miami, people were laughing about, oh, how cool is that? Odell Beckham is handing out cash and high fives. Really ridiculous, though, for LSU to have to come out and say, no, that was fake money he's handing out. But brilliant, because there's really no way for the NCAA to prove whether or not it was real cash. Like, obviously, any idiot looks at the video and says, yeah, why would Odell Beckham Jr. be carrying Monopoly money and handing out fake bills to people? It'd be ridiculous to even think that. But how does the NCAA prove that? Because the burden of proof would be on them. Odell Beckham Jr. would have no obligation to talk to the NCAA. Like, if they were to ask him, oh, we need to interview you to get some fact-finding on this, like, there's no subpoena. Like, he's not legally obligated to talk to them. There's really no way to prove it. So although it insults my intelligence for them to come out and say that that was fake money, that was actually a really smart explanation because there's no way the NCAA could prove it. And guess what? The NCAA is not going to waste their time trying to prove it. So we can move on from it because it's not going to be an issue.
Look, if they didn't investigate the donor that said that he gave two parents of family members of LSU players six figures earlier in the year, funneling through the hospital, they're not going to go ahead and investigate Odell Beckham giving out some hundreds after a game, even though it's clear as day on film. But listen, we all know that the NCAA picks and choose their battles. They look the other way for some people, and other ways they zero in on them. So
it's only a problem when Nevin Shapiro's doing that.
Oh, of course.
Not when
and I mean,
Beckham's
did you hear Kirk Herbstreit on the announcement?
No.
He was talking about all the great things they did this year, and he goes, and Coach O hired a bunch of great players too this year.
Wow, yeah, I like that.
Hired great players, huh? Dang.
By the way,
hire players.
Which broadcast did you watch? Did you watch the main one with Fowler and Herbstreit?
I watched the main one, yeah.
Man, I found myself like a kid in a candy store, because I really love when, because ESPN has every one of their channels, like ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN News. Like, they all have a different form of broadcast. Like, they have a film room, like a coach's room. I actually found myself watching the sideline broadcast for most of it. Like,
with
you're
Dan
not
Orlowski and all them.
Yeah, but like, you're not staring like from the sideline. It's a split screen. Like, you have for 70% of your screen, like, you have like the main camera on the game, but then you have a split screen with the reporters on the sidelines, and they're talking you through the game. Like, I found that to be incredibly enjoyable. And it makes me wonder if the NFL might ever consider doing something like that. I mean, I know that the broadcast contracts for the networks for the Super Bowl are gigantic, so they probably wouldn't want to tinker with that. But I found just having different options. Like, I wasted the first quarter of that game flipping through the various ESPN channels to find the one that I liked best, but I ended up settling on the sideline channel.
That's too much, man.
You think so?
Yeah.
But nobody's forcing you to watch it that way.
I think a lot
though.
Of people would like it, though.
Yeah.
Because, it's like Dan Orlowski and Pat McAfee, they're like more of goofballs, and they're like having fun with it, and some people enjoy that. I mean, I was out at a watch party, so it's not like we were really listening
so
listening, much.
And so
we're all watching the game and talking and stuff
but
like
you,
that.
But at a watch party, you want to watch the game.
The game,
so you
yes.
want the full ESPN, right. that full ESPN broadcast with Fowler and Herbstreit. You don't want, like, the three angles that they had on one channel, and then you had the coaches with like Gundy and
I tried
Mason.
To watch that. It was incredibly boring.
Yeah,
incredibly
it was boring.
Boring.
It was terrible.
The sideline one though, I thought was great.
Terrible. But ESPN has so many networks, you know, so they can get away with that. And I don't know if like Fox could do that.
If Fox could do it, because they have like Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2, like they could give you a couple options, but. I don't think that they would want to, like, split up the ratings between three different
Facts.
Networks for the advertisers and stuff. Like, I think they would just want to have it on one main broadcast so they can maximize those commercial sales. But, I mean, I don't know how you can say it's too much because nobody's, like, forcing you to watch one of the alternate broadcasts. If you want to, you can just watch Fowler and Herbstreit and just do it the old-fashioned way. But
some people have to work with.
That's true. You don't have very many options. Or were you here during the game last night?
I was
night?
Here today.
You were here. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that.
Last night?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Were we airing the game?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I was running the board for the game.
Well, so you're listening. Who was on the radio broadcast?
Sean McDonough and
Wait, hold on. The TVs didn't work?
No, the TVs were working.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
The full ESPN channel wasn't on, so I had to watch the coach's show.
Oh, you had to watch.
Yeah.
See, that's why he's sour.
That's why he's sour,
because he had to watch the split screen with no sound.
Exactly.
Because he had to listen to McDonough calling the game on the radio. And
McDonough
he was watching
was good.
The split screen.
Oh, McDonough no, he's
was,
not.
No, McDonough.
I'm not a fan.
Not.
McDonough was
fan.
Okay.
Puts me to sleep.
McDonough and Blackage was okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's the radio call. The game was long, by the way.
It was.
Like, it was a long-ass game.
Man, I looked. I was like, oh, we're going to the fourth quarter. Look at my clock. I'm like, 11:30. Is it really 11:30?
No, the second half went by fast. That first half was longer than life.
First half was eternal. And also, it's the national title game. They always start it late.
Yeah, you know,
the
but
player
it was like
10:30
by the time. It was 10:30 by the time halftime hit.
I'm so washed now, guys, that I'm literally going to spend the next 6 days recovering from the sleep that I lost last night.
Yeah,
like,
then you're going to do it again for Sunday.
Oh, my God, that's right. What time does the second AFC like the
6:40?
Well, yeah, it's 3 p.m. 6:40.
That's not so bad. That's not so bad because that'll be over by like 10 o'clock. That's not so. Bad.
Well, it depends if you're doing something for it. If you're
look
out
at me, I'm
somewhere.
Doing nothing.
I'm just saying.
I'll be reading right stories to my child at 7:30.
We're 2 years away from the start of the conference championship games to being pushed back another couple hours.
Oh
like,
yeah,
it's gonna be like one game's gonna be like at 4:30 and the other game's gonna be at 8.
Yeah,
more. The worst is like the NBA finals games start 9 o'clock. College basketball national title game. I mean, thankfully, college basketball games just move quicker, shorter halves, fewer commercial breaks. But they start the college basketball national title game at like 9 o'clock, 9:15
p.m. 9:19 opening. Yeah. It's because of the commercials and it's because of the stupid halftime, man.
No, it's because they try to cater to the West Coasters because they're like, oh, I don't care if people on the East Coast.
I'm not knocking the West Coast.
Well, I mean, you lived over there, so. I mean,
I'm not knocking for that.
I can understand.
It's a joy watching the game like at 4 o'clock, and then when the game ends at 9, you still have the rest of your evening. Unlike
that's
you guys.
Pretty good.
Yeah, like over here, when it gets 11:30, you're looking at the clock. You're like, I don't know if I can make it. I don't know if I can see the end of this game.
Let's get to some headlines, guys.
This is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a radio.com sports station.
So we'll be talking about the title game throughout, but LSU got it done last night. They beat Clemson 42-25. Joe freaking Burrow. Just another day at the office for this kid. 31-49 through the air, 463 yards, 5 touchdowns, 6 total touchdowns last night. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. So the national champions are Dan Day's LSU Tigers. They got the big victory yesterday. Miami Hurricanes hoops team will take on NC State on the road tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Miami Heat will host the San Antonio Spurs tomorrow night, 7:30. Florida Panthers will host the Los Angeles Kings on Thursday at 7 o'clock. You can
hear that one on our sister station, 560 The Joe. And, of course, Heat tomorrow night you can hear right here on 790 The Ticket with pregame starting at 6:30. But we have a lot to get to tonight, guys. Alex Dono alongside Brian Monroe, Vlad Louisant. When we come back, I want to get to our winners and losers from the national championship game last night. Keep it locked here to 790 The Ticket. Alex Dono in for Zach Duarte tonight. We got Brian Monroe in the building, Vlad Louisant in the building with you after the national title game last night. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I thoroughly enjoyed the way that Joe Burrow played. He's unbelievable. Amazing year. Just an amazing year for LSU. The only thing that bothers me coming out of that game, though, are all these idiots who don't remember anything past like 5 years ago saying that LSU is the greatest college football team of all time.
They get caught up in the moment, right? We live in the moment. That's what society is.
I mean, listen, we're not really going to know whether they're in that conversation with the 01 Canes until years down the road when you find out how many Pro Bowlers, how many Hall of Famers came off of this team.
Facts.
And the other fact is I was watching some real geeks, like way geekier than even me, some real geeks on social media, you know, talking about how, actually 0-1 Miami outscored their opponents by higher margins on average than LSU, so they were technically more dominant. Now, I don't want to bring up the fact that Miami was playing, you know, Big East schedule versus SEC West. Let's just move on from that very quickly. But still, if you're looking for tangible pieces of evidence for dominance, LSU does not surpass Miami even in the moment. And we're not going to know until, I don't know, 15, 20 years down the road until you see how many Pro Bowlers they've got, how many Hall of Famers they got, damn it.
I mean, you look at it anyways. First of all, I think the thing that separates is you can't take anything away from LSU. I think they're a phenomenal season, probably one of the best seasons I've ever seen from a team, especially in the offensive side of the ball. But I think it separates you in the defense side of the ball because I believe this LSU team gave up something like 21 points a game.
They did.
While the Miami Hurricanes team gave up 9.
Yeah.
And you can say all you want about, oh, they didn't play anybody the whole 9 yards, but you still gave up 9 points in playing, I think, 4 or 5 ranked teams or 5 or 6 ranked teams on that schedule. And then also, I believe the Miami Hurricanes gave up something like 117 points for the whole entire year, while this LSU team gave that up in the first 5 weeks playing.
You're one of those nerds that I was talking about who remember all these numbers.
I saw it today. It wasn't like the likes of Georgia and everybody else. It was the likes of like Utah State and Northeastern, and that's what they gave up 117 points. So I think the real big difference would be the Miami Hurricanes defense against this offense is where you're saying,
right.
Like, okay, you can say all you want about the studs they have because they got studs. But you look at that Miami Hurricanes defense and you're like, all right, so your tight end's going to go against, DJ Williams and Jonathan Vilma, and it's going to be no big deal.
Nasty.
And you want to talk about
DJ.
Our 4'3 corner, 6'2 as well, Mike Rumpf and Phillip Buchanan, two
Nasty.
First-round picks. And then also you got the guy
safeties.
In the middle, Ed Reed, just chilling, and Lewis as well, just chilling as well. And
then, there's a backup named Sean Taylor.
There's a backup on this team that were, kind of nasty, Vince Wolf.
We had Sean Taylor redshirting that year.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, if Sean Taylor played today – They would, there'd be no even talk, redshirt Sean Taylor. Couldn't put him in a starting lineup at 18 years old enough.
No, I mean, it's always going to be a fun argument, and I know the LSU people are going to say they're going to do it, and then just like the Florida State peoples of the past, their team was, and the Floridas, and the Nebraska, the 94s and 95s, it's a fun argument, we'll never know, but if you say collection of talent on one field, the only argument I've ever gotten from somebody, and I had to look it up, was like the 78 SC or something like that, 77, where they had 11 Hall of Famers.
Right.
But still, that team ain't stopping no 2001 Hurricane team.
Right.
Come on.
Well, the funny thing is, do you think, because what I said about people not remembering, 19 years ago, do you think after 01, when blowhards like me were proclaiming 01 Miami best college football team of all time, there were some old heads who were like, what about 78 SC? How are you forgetting about 78 USC?
I mean, look, you talk about talent, you can't – the facts are facts. They got Hall of Famers. But if you look at, nutrition, the type of athletes they are
evolution
now,
of the game.
Everything like that, evolution of the game, it's hard to put that 70 team and be like, yeah, you're going to stay in the field with these type of dudes. Now, if you took that 70 team and put them in today's age and today's technology, now we're talking a different thing.
Right.
But we can't do that. That's not how the argument works. If I had to say put this team against that team, it's hard to say any team could beat that 2001 national championship team from Miami.
How about this? I don't even LSU is a great team, but I don't even think they're better than some of the one-loss teams in college football history. Like that 87 Hurricanes team was better than this 2019.
And the 86 team, outside of the poor championship game, might have been better than the 87 team.
Right.
Well, what about the 2002 Hurricanes team?
Yeah.
That's Willis McGahee doing what he did, yeah. And Sean actually starring.
Right, and
Antrel
Roll
I mean, you're talking – I think that's the one key about that UM team. And during the UM dynasties, that they were solid both sides, all three sides, special teams, defense, and offense. The only thing that LSU would give them the edge is Burroughs. Like, Burroughs is not because he only won Heisman, but he's that dude in college.
Yeah, he's that dude.
Yeah, so that's the only key, but – he would have to go against.
He would go against a defense he hasn't seen before.
Like, he's going against 11, like, guys, like, maybe all 11 that been in the league.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 8 of them Pro Bowlers.
You do know that only, I believe it was only 3 guys didn't get drafted, and it was because one, I believe.
What, from
it was
the starting 22?
22. Wow. I believe it was Shurko, who became a doctor.
Right.
And then Chris Campbell, rest in peace.
Yeah.
He passed away before he could make it. And there was – oh, and then there was Romberg, who didn't get drafted, I believe, but still went on to play for –
yeah, right. I forgot he didn't get drafted.
How many years,
right.
And was a Remington and went –
well,
that's
probably the only reason why he didn't get drafted was he was on the smaller side. Just
but he won the Remington.
They,
he was
right.
number, he was the center of the year.
Yeah.
And
that's
the only 3
said,
guys that didn't get drafted on that squad. Everybody else got drafted.
Well, speaking of the draft, that leads me to want to give you my winner and loser of the game last night. My big winner – nobody that was on that field. I go with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, man.
Right? Because that's my big winner. Because the Bengals front office was watching that game last night just salivating. Like, they probably felt like they took a Viagra a couple hours before that game. Like, they were so into watching what Joe Burrow was doing. I mean, this guy, the numbers that he put up not only last night but all season, 463 passing yards, ran for 58, 6 touchdowns yesterday, total touchdowns. On the season, threw 60 touchdown passes, over 6,000 yards of offense. Like, this is an people can debate whether or not they think LSU is the greatest college football team of all time. I think the better debate would be whether Joe Burrow just had the best season, like best individual season in college football history, because that was tremendous. Yeah, I was listening to Hawk and Crowder this afternoon, and they were talking with John Clayton, the professor, mm-hmm. John Clayton. Not that anybody knows what he's thinking, Burrow. Like, who knows? Like, I don't know the kid well enough, just that he looks like Macaulay Culkin and that he smoked a fat stogie in the locker room last night. I don't know the guy well enough, but John Clayton brought up the possibility, even though Burrow is an Ohio kid, what if he just pulls the Eli Manning and says, you know what? Being drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals, that organization, is just not something I'm interested in. What if he tries to do the Eli Manning, John Elway, although that was a little bit different because he had the baseball leverage, but what if he tries to pull the Eli Manning power play? I don't know if that's in that kid's personality or not. It probably isn't. But do you think there's any chance? Because if the Miami Dolphins have any chance...
I like that, Dotto.
You like that thought, right?
I like that, Dotto. I like it.
I'm going to push this agenda. I'm going to push that. Like, I'm going to slide into Joe Burrow's DMs with, like, pictures of South Beach and some of the women. Like,
Brian, he's asking – you're basically asking Brian, if Cincinnati says, give me all 3 picks and you get the number 1 pick, Joe Burrow.
But the thing is, like, I don't think – like, Cincinnati would have to be crazy to do that under normal circumstances.
I don't think so.
Honestly, no, because you don't want to be the team that passes up drafting Burrow, even if it's for 3 first-round picks. I think the only way you can make this happen is if Burrow pulls the Eli power play and says, no, I'm not going to sign there.
Right, no, but if he does, wouldn't you – if I'm Cincinnati, I can get 3 first-round picks?
But see, here's the thing. I wouldn't want the 3 first-round picks from this year. I would want your pick next year because it's going to be higher.
You're going to give me more.
And I'll take the 18th pick this year as well. Mm. I won't take the 20-something.
So you want 2.
Give me 2 this year and then give me your pick next year because I'm going to trust that it's going to be higher than 20-something.
I want more than that also.
Well, of course. But here's the thing. I was going to ask you that. What would it take if you were the Bengals GM to move out of that space?
So the Dolphins have 14
Not even just the Dolphins. Not just the Dolphins. What would it take if you're the Cincinnati Bengals GM for someone to say, I want number 1, what's it going to take?
How much did Mike Ditka give up for Ricky Williams?
Probably the whole draft?
Probably that.
But how did that work out?
Good for Ricky.
Yeah, good for Ricky.
not good for anybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to lie to you. I want it all. I want your 3 this year, and I want your first next year, and the first the following year.
I ain't doing that for a quarterback.
I want 5 first-round picks.
No way. I ain't doing
That's
it.
Steep.
But you got three this year.
That's so risky on both sides.
It's not like I'm on five for the next year, like 5 years or something like that. You got three this year. No matter what happens.
You got two next year, yeah. That's 2 years of first-round picks. Like, that's rough. Like, that's a tough one on both sides.
I got $100 million.
Because if you're Cincinnati and you're saying this is a generational quarterback talent, there should be no asking price for that. Like, we just want, like, if the Dolphins want him that bad, don't you think the Bengals also want him that bad?
Oh, for sure.
They say, we're just going to pick him. Like, we're just going to keep our pick and pick him. So what if he does end up being, like, the next Elway Hall of Fame guy and we were stupid enough to trade him away for a handful of first-round picks? And then if you're on the Dolphins side of it, what if it doesn't work out? What if he's not really the next Elway and you give up five first-round picks and he's just good or very good or just a guy? Then you regret it. I think it's very risky on both sides.
He's got to be in the right opportunity, right? He's got to be in the right situation because we talk about all the time, oh, this guy didn't turn out well. Well, look at the opportunity that he had, right? Coaching staffs, players that surround him, right? We all know Cincinnati's been a little bit of a dumpster fire the last, 10, 15, 20 years, however much you want to say. You put him in that situation, you look at the weapons that he has, is A.J. Green going to re-sign? Mm. Are their offensive line going to hold up? Are they going to be healthy? Is this coach the guy or they're going to have to go get somebody else?
Yeah,
who is this offensive coordinator? Yeah,
grabbing new coaches every year,
so
that's years.
That's the problem. Like, the opportunity that he's going to be set in might not make him be this Elway or this guy that he set in college records and he goes to the league. But let's just imagine if Joe Burrow had a good year. He didn't sell the records, but he had a good year. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he went in the second or third round to a team where he sat for a year or two and then became the Joe Brady we just saw.
That's the ideal situation.
That's the ideal situation, but he's not going to be in that. He's going to be with the Bengals.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the best situation. So, hey, listen, best of luck behind that offensive line they got up there. And we're going to see, boy. Joe, I'm telling you. And here's also the thing. Is he just a one-hit wonder?
That's what I'm afraid. Well, let me ask you because this is purely a hypothetical because one of these guys is not even eligible to come out for the draft. I'm talking about Trevor Lawrence. He has to play another year. No question, Burrow had the much better game last night, clearly. But let's say hypothetically, they're both available this year. You are GM Brian Monroe. Which one do you think would be the safer pick, would have the better pro career? Because we've seen Lawrence do it for 2 years,
yeah.
Right? As opposed to Burrow having maybe the best single year in college football history, but it is just that one single year. Do you think the safer bet for the future would be Trevor Lawrence, who's given you, was 25-0 up until last night. He's given you the larger sample size of greatness.
You know, that's the thing. If people live in the moment we just talked about earlier, everyone's like, Joe Burrow, no, hands down. And I'm like, okay, you could look at Joe Burrow and see what he did for the 1 year, but you look at Trevor Lawrence and say, the dude was undefeated. The dude is prototypical what you want in a quarterback. What is he, 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah.
He can run. He can move. Yes, he had a bad game, but it was going to happen sooner or later.
Right, right, right.
I say if you're looking at just pro potential, then you got to go with Trevor Lawrence.
And he is my loser from last night, and it's strictly just the one-time thing because, what did he have, 13 overthrows last night,
yeah.
Six overthrows mm-hmm. on third down. Just wasn't his night.
Nope.
It just was a subpar performance from Trevor Lawrence. First loss in collegiate history. Like, he's got a Ken Dorsey-like record now, at 25-1 now as a starter. So he may end up winning a title next year, winning a Heisman next year, bouncing back. So he's going to have his chances to have great moments. But I thought he was my loser last night because when he had opportunities to extend drives, pick up first downs on big third downs and help his team win that game, he came up short, or in his case came up long because he was overthrowing passes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was my loser of the night last night.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. Yes, you can't put the blame on him because without him they're not in the championship game, and it sucks that he had his worst career game in the biggest stage. But again, it's bound to happen. You're going to have bad games. It's just what it is. Nobody's perfect. But yeah, I mean, you can say that he is the loser of the game, but it just sucks that you have your worst game on the biggest stage. And now you hear they didn't play anybody the whole year. And I'm like, oh yeah, they just played Ohio State, who everybody said was better than this LSU team, the committee, throughout the whole entire year. So don't give me he didn't play anybody because they beat him and he single-handedly beat them on the ground by himself.
Did you see, it was part of a really, really long ESPN piece on college football, but part of it was wondering if Miami can be the next LSU. That was my reaction as well. They gave you a few because they're talking about teams that are now modernizing their offenses the way that LSU just did.
Mm-hmm.
And the possibilities of the next LSU, they throw Georgia out there. They throw Washington out there.
and they throw Miami out there. Miami's Manny Diaz couldn't find any answers on offense last year and just asked former Auburn and SMU spread whiz kid Rhett Lashley to spruce things up. Thing is, I don't even want to be putting, like, coming off a 6-7 season.
Yeah, like, no, come on, man.
Miami, the only team not to score a point in their bowl game. Yeah. I mean, and what are there, 150 bowl games at this point? Yeah. 40 bowl, like, everybody plays in bowl games now. Miami was the only team to get shut out in their bowl game to even, and I love Miami.
That's
so this
sad.
This is coming from a place of love when I say this. I'm not one of these Gator lovers who trolls Miami. I love the Hurricanes more than anything, but I don't even want to read some national writer wondering if Miami can be the next LSU when my team couldn't beat FIU. Like, I don't even want to be having that conversation.
Or Louisiana Tech.
Or yeah, FIU. You had to bring that one up. Like,
or
like
Duke.
Georgia Tech. Give me, like, show me in the near future. Show me in the near future that you could beat the Georgia Techs and the FIUs and the Louisiana Techs of the world before I start wondering if Miami can have the turnaround and become the next LSU.
You'll never get me to agree with that that article because, one, everybody knows I love my team, I love my school, but I'm a realist. I look at the roster and say, you're going to compare this roster to the LSU roster and they're going to make that jump next year? Okay, well, where's your number one overall pick quarterback? Where's your go-to Biletnikoff receiver?
They got to get that transfer, the
De'Aaron King.
Even
if you get De'Aaron King, he's not going to be Joe Burrow. He's not about to throw 60 touchdowns.
And I don't think he's coming here anyway.
No, I mean, listen, if you're
going to end up at Oklahoma,
if you're De'Aaron King and you're saying, okay, well, what are the three schools that they've mentioned me with, or the four schools? Huh? Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Oregon.
Yeah.
Which school has done a better job with transfer quarterbacks? Huh, Oklahoma. Hey, Lincoln Riley, let me holler at you real quick. If you look at Miami, that's not the number one school. As much as I would love to have him here, it's like a Jamie Newman, right, from Wake Forest. Would have loved to have him here. He chose Georgia. Why?
Right.
Georgia's been in the championship game in the most recent years. They've been in the top of the SEC. They have talent everywhere. Yes, they lose a lot of offensive linemen, but if he looks at his weapons, he's got weapons everywhere. So for me to say, oh, De'Aaron King, yeah, he's going to come here. Well, if Coach Lashley is able to get De'Aaron King to transfer to Miami, that's how I'm going to know he's going to be a good recruiter moving forward because he's got a lot to do. But as far as you just look at talent, of roster talent, LSU, Miami, there is no way in hell this Hurricanes team is making that jump to championship level or even to the playoff level next year. How about we win the Coastal first? Then we could talk about something.
I'm sure we've all by now, and all three of us in the room, I'm sure, plus many people listening, have read the Barry Jackson article about the party culture at Miami and the party culture permeating into the quarterback room. Do you think there's a lot to that? Like, do you think maybe this story, and I'm not questioning the reporting because Barry Jackson does an unbelievable job. I'm not questioning that, but do you think maybe like his source might have been, I don't know, a disgruntled former player?
Oh, facts.
Because we've seen plenty of people, you know, transfer out, be in bad terms with the team, and maybe they're overblowing this situation because Miami was so bad last year. Like, do you think maybe, and even if the party thing was a big part of Jaren Williams and Nicosi Perry's problems, do you think they could actually, heading into, you know, sophomore and junior years, third, fourth years respectively, could just put that stuff behind them and change their ways? Like, do you think maybe the only thing separating Jaren Williams from being a great starter for 12 games instead of a really good starter for 5 or 6 games might be cutting down on the partying? Like, what was your big takeaway with that story?
Well, there's a lot to the story, right? First and foremost, I thought it was somebody that's not with the team anymore to come out and say the things that they said. It was probably somebody also that wasn't happy with their playing time or, you know, what the situation happened for them that unfolded with the Hurricanes. But then again, I look at those situations and say, well, how much work did you put in outside of the football facility? You know, as far as how much did you study film? How much did you cut down on going out or doing fun stuff to be better or to get on the field? You know, there's sacrifices to be a great player or great, just be great at anything. You know, like the greatest, you know, CEOs and the greatest people that own companies a lot of times say, hey, by the way, I didn't go out for 2 years. Why? Because I was working on this. Okay.
Well, and on that note, like,
And I know that everyone who plays football at that level should probably be doing at least something during the off season. But
yeah.
The actual season's not very long, right?
No.
So if you've got more window to party outside of the season, like you're worried about August, September, October, November, and then when spring rolls around for about a month, month and a half, the rest of the year is yours to get a little crazy.
Yeah,
right?
And then you look at you know, Nakosi Perry and Jaren Williams. It's no shocker that these two didn't handle, you know, their stuff on off the field, because we know with Jaren this year, you won the job, then you don't come to practice on a Wednesday. Then you got Nakosi Perry last year that put I don't know how many videos up on Snapchat.
Right.
And, you know, but then I look at the coaching staff, right? Because when you get in trouble, there's a thing called discipline.
Yes.
And it's about how you handle discipline. Now, it doesn't mean that you need to kick somebody off the team, but you need to show them that for every action, there is going to be a consequence.
Give them a little tough love.
So if that means you miss practice, that means you miss the game.
Yeah.
Straight up. You missed the whole entire game, not come in the second FFIU. I don't even care if we lose the game. You missed the game because this is what happens, and you have to instill discipline with this team. If you don't have somebody on, or like a CEO type, the coach on top of them saying, if you do this, there will be a consequence or a reaction, then these kids will always think they can get away with everything. You have to be the one to instill that. Now, whether that's new coach, Coach Lashley, the offensive line coach coming in that sets a new precedent in their meeting rooms and say, hey, by the way, if this happens, you're gone.
Well, and isn't his name Justice?
So Justice,
So I think that lends perfectly to
him.
You're going
to have some justice on that.
He can lay down some justice.
Yeah, and then, you know, we always say this as a former player. It's not just all in the coaches, too. It's all on these young men. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, by the way, what do I want? What do I want from this opportunity? What do I want from being the starting quarterback at the University of Miami? Do I think I could just go through the motions and be good? Or do I have to sacrifice some things to be great?
Right.
Meaning not partying at this time. Meaning let me hit the film room a little bit more. Because, by the way, there's going to be a lot of times to party. We partied a lot. But the difference is that we policed ourselves. Like this whole thing that I hear about him going out before a game. First of all, how does that happen? Right? How does it happen?
Yeah, the night before kids
eat. It's physically impossible.
Because even home games, you stay at a hotel.
You stay at a hotel.
You got a curfew.
And we got a curfew, a bed check, and a team cop that stays on your floor.
Wow.
That you can't leave. And trust
me. Who was their team cop? Paul Blart? Like, what was he sleeping on the job? Like,
I have
what the hell was happening?
I heard that and I go, wait, hold on. So have they changed what they've done when we were there? Because it just wouldn't happen. But then also, you wouldn't have guys that would be like, you know what? Let me go get drunk before a game. Like, no.
Yeah.
We would police ourselves because, by the way, you get your ass whooped if you did some stuff like that when I played. It just
Rich, you had accountability. So you had a lot of accountability. So if Brian Monroe went out and got drunk off his ass before a game, somebody like DJ Williams or Sean Taylor is kicking your ass.
If I meant something to the team, if I was just a
guy.
So
you didn't?
No, I'm just saying.
I know. I'm just joking.
If I was just a guy, no one would care. But if you're somebody that could help this team win, then the team would get on you themselves.
Yeah.
But we don't have that in this locker room yet. We had a couple guys here and there, but we also have nobody that scares you. Like, we had dudes, you walk in the locker room, you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Right.
Who wants to mess with Big Daddy Wolf?
That's
man.
Big Daddy Wolf over there. That's Sean Taylor. Oh, damn. Okay, you know what? I ain't going to say nothing. I'm just going to do my thing and keep it moving, you know? They don't have that. They have nobody that instills fear that is the coach in the locker room. There's nobody that is a leader that everyone looks up to. There's nobody that you're saying, you know what? I'm going to follow and do what he does. They got to find more of that to be back to a level of good, to be a good team. I'm not even going to say great yet.
Yeah,
I'm just
going to
say a good team.
You're right. Like, they're bad. Like,
yeah.
Okay, they won just enough games to go play at a bowl game and go get shut out by Louisiana Tech.
Yeah.
They're bad.
They're a bad team.
They're bad.
Yeah.
You can always get at us at 67974 on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line. Jeez, I'm sorry I opened this text line. We're getting roasted. Canes need a clean house. Too many Alex Donos on the roster who are only about themselves. Stat.
Damn.
And partying instead of winning games.
Damn, Donald, you party like that?
Not in about 20 years, bro. Well, no, not 20. I'm not that old. No, it's been a good 10 years since I did a decent amount of partying. Ooh, it's been a good amount of time. Oh, man. Listening to you guys live in the past with old Miami teams is hysterical. Joe Burrow would crush any past college team, period.
Jesus, get out of here with that. What are you smoking?
Hey, you just stopped being breastfed?
Yeah, like, by the way, I don't even,
clearly you must have just stopped being breastfed.
That person was born in like 05.
That person was born two years ago. Okay. Get out of here.
Oh,
Burrow's
man.
Come on. Leave. It's one season. That's the other difference. When you seen this UM team, you already saw it. You saw year after year. That last run was a 5-year run.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was, you saw it. It wasn't like, oh, one. Listen, I can't take anything away from LSU. You beat 7 top 10 teams in a season.
Wait, but now it counts, right? Now they say 7 top 10 teams.
No.
But when it came to committee and we were arguing that they should be number one
and
Ohio State was number two, they would say, oh, well, Texas isn't ranked right now. Oh, but now they want to use it in the argument.
Yeah, you know. Come on, man. That's UM hate. Come on.
When we come back, I want to get into something with all this Alonzo Highsmith talk. And no, I don't have any new information as to whether or not he's coming. Although I have noticed, Brian, that most of these so-called sources on him taking the job are people with like 40 followers, burner basement dwellers, burner accounts, living in mom's basement. Like, until you see it from the Barry Jacksons or the Tim Reynolds or the Manny Navarros or the Dave Hydes of the world, we're just flapping our gums, just wasting our time at that point. But there is something about this potential move, a possibility, that scares me a little bit. We'll get into that next. Now, on the surface, I would love the idea of Alonzo Highsmith coming back to the U, coming back home, taking some kind of a role with a football program. Like, it sounds great. It almost sounds too good to be true. What concerns me a little bit about the possibility is, since they would be, hypothetically, we don't have anything new on whether or not he's coming. And the longer it takes, the more I feel like he's not coming, just FYI. But if they're creating a new position for this man, and they are debating how many powers to give him along with how much money to give him. Like, if you really wanted Alonzo Highsmith that badly, maybe you give him an existing job like recruiting coordinator, or hell, even if you were interested, maybe the athletic director job, if that were to ever come open. I think what scares me about creating a new position for him, if you're talking about giving him any real power in the organization, because the way the job is described, it almost sounds like the Board of Trustees wants like a spy on Manny Diaz.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much, right? So what concerns me is, if you create this position for Alonzo Highsmith, we're assuming this becomes a permanent position because you've created it, that it's either going to be Alonzo Highsmith or someone else is the chief of staff of Miami football, and you basically have a full-time spy of the Board of Trustees overseeing the football program. How much less attractive does it make that coaching job down the road? Like, think about it, because I know right now, fans who are living in the moment, coming off a 6-7 season with embarrassing losses to FIU and Louisiana Tech, coming off of that, a lot of fans do not trust Manny Diaz, and they think, yeah, I would love it if the Board of Trustees had a spy on Manny Diaz, because living in the moment, you're upset, you're concerned about the Manny Diaz tenure, but then what happens someday when Manny Diaz is no longer the coach? Do you still have a spy of the Board of Trustees? And if you're trying to hire a new coach or a big name, like, God forbid you try to hire someone who's been a head coach of a major program who wants to come down to Miami, how much less attractive does that job become if they have a full-time Board of Trustees spy working for the, like, that's what scares me. And this is not my way at all of saying that I don't want Alonzo Highsmith working for my university, because I think it's a tremendous idea. If he really wants it, I would love it. I just wonder how they are going to define this position if they create it. Like, is it going to be more of a symbolic ambassador type role? Is it going to be like he's someone who assists Manny Diaz in evaluation and recruiting? Or, you know, because some people envision this as him becoming like the general manager of the football program. That scares me a little bit, because if that's not something you see commonly throughout the country, does that make the head coaching job at Miami less attractive down the road because you report to someone like Alonzo Highsmith?
Well, there's so much to this story, right? Let's start off by saying that if he did get that role called chief of staff, or if you want to say spy to the bots.
Well, I'm sure they wouldn't call it that officially.
No, of course
I would
not.
Hope. I would hope.
No other big-time coach would come here.
Right.
They would be like, okay, well, you're eliminating that because this is
You would just be getting coaches from Temple forever. Like, every time you need a coach, who's Temple got, we'll take him.
Just like in the NFL, right? If a new coach comes in, I want a new GM. I want my guy to come in. This is my ship. This is how I'm going to run it. I love Alonzo Highsmith, what he's done for university. We can figure something else up for him, but he's not going to be a general manager role
right.
if I am the new coach coming in.
Right.
Now, yes, with Manny Diaz, everybody wants to see it because Manny had, you know, a horrible season, also didn't say the best of things, just didn't handle a first year the best way. But then again, that's why you don't offer a first-year coach a job like this. Go let him to Temple and let him get his licks and his wounds and some snakes.
He never lost at Temple, though.
He never lost. He was undefeated. Yeah. Better record than I have in my coaching career. But Alonzo, you look at it like this, right? I heard the first time I heard it, I was like, all right, cool, let me reach out to somebody. So I reach out to somebody that works very close with Alonzo, and I was like, hey, so you coming with Alonzo if he comes down to Miami? And he goes, look, Alonzo told me he's not taking the job in Miami.
Hmm.
I said, all right, cool. Now, this is when he was still employed with the Browns.
Right.
And this is when John Dorsey was still employed with the Browns. Now, obviously, after all that happened, it completely changes everything because we don't know if Alonzo is still going to be with the Browns moving forward. They just hired their coach. We'll see what they do with their scouting department and also with Alonzo's job. Do I think Alonzo wants to come work at the University of Miami? Yes, I think he wants to help his alma mater. I think he has the knowledge of the ins and outs of an NFL team. I think he does a great job of talent evaluation, and I think he knows how to run that kind of stuff, and that's why I would love to have him as a role in Miami.
Right.
Love to have him here as a talent evaluator, also for the connections and all the different with the high school coaches. You need to have somebody that's been able to create those type of relationships and keep those relationships. You know, Alonzo played at Columbus High School. He knows a lot of people down here. His name, it resonates down here. So I would love to have him for those two big things, because having a guy as a talent evaluator is the biggest thing you can have at a program
anywhere.
And
the way that you're describing that potential role, I love that. But some people think, oh, if they give him a job, he's going to be the sheriff. Like, I don't think that's a good – like, I think you're setting a dangerous precedent if you create a Miami football sheriff who – oversees the head coach. Like, I just don't think you need to rat it. Like, if the trustees really hated Manny Diaz that much, maybe you just find a new coach instead of creating a guy who's the sheriff over him.
So, okay, I keep hearing this thing about, yeah, just get rid of Manny Diaz and just get rid of Blake James and hire a new coach. Let me ask you a question. Who's paying for all this?
Not me.
Okay, so.
And just so you know, like, I know you're speaking to the listeners, because I am not in favor of firing Manny Diaz.
Yeah, I'm just
now.
Speaking
just
to the listeners.
I just want to make that clear.
I'm speaking to everyone out there, especially that I see on Twitter about this and that. I'm just saying, who's paying for all this, right? Because we already paid the $4 million to Temple. We paid the Manny's salary, and we paid all his coordinators and his coaches. Then you have to pay Daniel Nielsen's buyout and everything they do. Then you just hired a new coach last year, so you're paying for that. Now if you fire Manny Diaz, you have to pay his buyout, and then you got to go get another coach. By the way, do you guys know the people that put down all this money? Because I know some of the people that put down this money, and they say they're not really putting any money down right now. So I just want to know.
Well, why are they not putting money down?
Because they did it already.
Right.
They're
broke.
They did it for Mark Richt. You know, everyone says we don't spend any money. Okay, boom, we went and got Mark Richt.
Yeah.
Okay, then Mark Richt did the most amazing thing in the world. He retired. He did not sue the university like Al Golden has.
Might be because they're paying Al Golden like a dollar a day for the rest of his life.
But he left 16 or 18 million on the table.
Yeah.
You know how much that is?
Like, a lot.
I don't care if I love you. I'm getting my money. But he said, you know what? I'm going to leave it on the table. And that's the reason why we're able to pay the $4 million buyout, be able to pay Manny Diaz and all his coaches. Now you guys want to do it all over again, and you expect him to pony up again? That's not what I heard.
Nope.
There ain't pony up any money. So you guys better get used to Manny Diaz this year. And by the way, everyone was pissed off at Al Golden and Mark Richt. That's the name I was going to say.
Oh.
They didn't get rid of Mark D'Onofrio, and Mark Richt didn't give up play calling and get rid of his son. Now you have Manny Diaz, who is, after a first year, getting rid of Dan Enos.
Yes, thank you.
Got rid of the offensive line coach, brought in a coach that everybody wanted to see, the spread, attack, up-tempo type offense. And people are still moaning about it. Listen, can you be happy about something? Yes, the season sucked. I agree with you 100%. I was pissed off the whole season. But now he's taking the steps to say, you know what? This didn't work. Let me get rid of it. Let me bring in the guy that runs the spread that the kids all play in high school and Pop Warner that would love to play. And let me see if I can go ahead and right the ship.
Do you know what's ruining that, though? Like, because you're right. Like, I give Diaz a lot of credit. Like, a good CEO, He's trying to make changes to fix the problem. But I think what's ruining that for a lot of fans is the whole Alonzo Highsmith thing, because everyone is speculating. They're angry. Why haven't they hired him yet? Oh, Manny is just being selfish because he doesn't want someone taking some of his power away, or Blake James is being selfish. Like, what we should have been doing for the last week is celebrating the fact that they're bringing in Rhett Lashley, that they're modernizing the offense. And I'm not saying no one is celebrating that, because I do see plenty of people who are, but I think the whole Alonzo Highsmith cloud has taken away from that celebration for a lot of people, because they're so busy speculating on whether or not Zoe is coming that they're not appreciating the fact that Miami is bringing their offense into the 21st century. By the way, I see my guy Dan Day over there. We got to get a day spa before he leaves. See if we can get some day spa headlines coming up around 7 o'clock. You're listening to Alex Dono, Brian Monroe with you. We got the great Vlad Luisant on the other side of the glass. Keep it locked at 790 The Ticket.